WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. According to a new report issued by the World Watch Institute, at least 1 million women will die this year of reproductive health problems, and 100 million other women will suffer from related disabling illnesses. My guest, Jody Jacobson, is a senior researcher at World Watch and the author of the report Women's Reproductive Health, The Silent Emergency. While there have always been problems surrounding complications from pregnancy and childbirth, this report warns that new threats are on the rise, threats from the increased reliance on unsafe abortions, the spread of AIDS and other sexually transmitted diseases, and the lack of access to safe contraceptives. Yet, Jacobson says, women's reproductive health problems go largely unnoticed by the world health community. I asked her why.
I think there are a number of reasons. One is that the status of women in most countries of the world remains relatively low if you measure it in terms of income, in terms of education, in terms of political power. And so their problems are relatively unattended to. And also because reproductive health has to do with that set of issues, including sexuality, pregnancy, abortion, that we are usually loath to talk about in the open and that we're slow to move to address things that have to do with these issues. And when we do so, we do it in a simplistic and very political way, as we've seen with the abortion controversy.
What are we specifically referring to when we're talking about reproductive health?
Well, women's reproductive health is comprised of three basic areas, if you will. One is maternal health, and that's primarily determined by complications of pregnancy and unsafe abortion. Maternal health problems are the leading cause of reproductive health problems in most developing countries, according to the data that's available right now. The second category, and the fastest growing category of problems, are reproductive tract infections, including more widely recognized things like syphilis and gonorrhea, but extending to other kinds of infections like chlamydia and the human papillomavirus, which causes cervical cancer. These infections are on the rise, not only among populations in developing countries, but also within the industrial countries. And thirdly, we have a lot of problems that we're seeing from the inappropriate use of contraceptive methods. Let me give you an example. In Brazil, where oral contraceptives, the contraceptive pill, is available over the counter and without a doctor's prescription, many women who should not be using the pill are using it and using it in under conditions which endanger their health. For instance, many of them are smokers. They're over the age of 35. Consequently, stroke is now a leading cause of death among women of reproductive age in Brazil as related to the inappropriate use of the contraceptive pill. So we have, as I said, the combine of these three factors makes up women's reproductive health and is causing a literal epidemic among women throughout the world.
There's been an emphasis in many third world countries on population control, but has there not been an accompanying emphasis on the women's health?
Well, I think that this is one of the problems, is that most family planning programs have been put into place in order to slow population growth. And so in order to reduce birth rates, contraceptives have been made available. Unfortunately, in doing so, most governments have neither made the information available for which women would use the contraceptive safely, nor have they put an emphasis on the kinds of contraceptive methods women might use, such as barrier methods, which would prevent the spread of infection. And so they've narrowed the options that women face at the same time that they've put pressure on women to have fewer children. This has resulted either in the use of contraceptives that are not being used properly, as in the case I mentioned of Brazil, or in women shunning contraceptives altogether and relying on unsafe and illegal abortions to control their fertility.
Is it possible to estimate how much death or illness is caused by unsafe abortion?
Yeah, it is possible. There are estimates on that. When you look at maternal health specifically, we know that some 500,000 women die each year as a result of complications of pregnancy and unsafe abortion. Approximately a third of those to a half of those are the result of unsafe abortion. So we're looking at about 200,000 or 250,000 deaths each year. Right now, we know, for instance, that unsafe abortion is the leading killer of women of reproductive age in Latin America. It is the leading killer of women of reproductive age increasingly in urban areas of countries like Bangladesh and India, where other kinds of pregnancy-related problems remain very important to women. So we see an increase in the numbers of unsafe abortion, but no one's looking at these problems because of the great political controversy surrounding abortion.
My guest is Jody Jacobson, author of the new report, Women's Reproductive Health, The Silent Emergency. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jody Jacobson, a senior researcher at the World Watch Institute. Are there restrictions on American healthcare aid to countries that have legal abortion, or to clinics in other countries that practice abortion, that perform abortion?
Yes. Now, let me make a very important distinction. The Agency for International Development, which is the channel through which the vast majority of funds to these kinds of programs flow, deals with two different aspects. One is health, and that primarily focuses on child health and the eradication of disease like malaria. And the other is family planning, which primarily focuses on contraception and supposedly those programs that would prevent the need for abortion. There is no section of the United States Agency for International Development which deals particularly with reproductive health. And your question cuts across both the family planning and the health issues. However, since it is within the realm of family planning that reproductive health is addressed, if it is addressed at all, this policy, the Mexico City policy, which cuts off to organizations working in other countries any assistance, if they are working at all on the issue of abortion, from collecting data to providing services, it does affect clinics in those countries where abortion services might be available to women, or where women might go to get treatment for the complications of unsafe abortions performed elsewhere.
Would you just explain what the Mexico City decision was?
The Mexico City policy is basically a policy put in place by the Reagan administration and kept in place by the Bush administration that forbids U.S. funds going to any group that provides access to safe abortion services, does any research on abortions or counsels for abortions in developing countries, even in those countries where abortion is legal, and that's where, you know, those services are provided by groups like International Planned Parenthood Federation. And so essentially what it does is to say to those organizations, even though you're providing family planning services with our money, because you're not allowed to provide any abortion services with our money, if you're providing abortion services with other people's money, we're still not going to give you family planning money or contraceptive supplies. So many of the organizations that have said, you know, we just won't sign this contract, have had to lose their U.S. funding. And basically that's endangered their programs because they're already short of funding. They need as much money as can possibly be gotten to meet the needs of the rapidly growing needs of women throughout the world for family planning services and information. And so, yes, it has compromised women's reproductive health and probably led to a greater reliance on unsafe abortion than would otherwise have been the case.
So some clinics are faced with the decision of either losing the United States aid or stopping abortion at their clinic.
Stopping providing abortion services, that's right.
Right. Now, in terms of pregnancy and childbirth, considering you're writing about parts of the world where there's very little really good health care to begin with, what do you think can be done to help women's health?
Let's take, for instance, this example of a group I visited in India called Sewa, which in Hindi means service. It's a health group that works in, it's not connected to another Sewa with which people may be familiar, which is a women's trade union organization, but is a health group that works in the Indian state of Gujarat. And their approach to pregnancy-related problems has been to use doctors to train the village midwives, bringing them together on a monthly basis for training and for feedback from the midwives themselves on what their problems are and how they face obstacles within the villages, to train them in techniques that are positive techniques. For instance, many traditional midwives use the traditional practice of cutting the umbilical cord of an infant with any shard of glass or razor or a piece of sharp material that might be lying around. Oftentimes, this leads to high rates of tetanus infection, not only in the infant, but in the mother. Similarly, they might not wash their hands before reaching into the vaginal canal to assist in a birth. There are numerous other practices that traditional midwives undertake because this is what they've done for, you know, centuries. By training midwives in appropriate techniques, you can sharply reduce the number of maternal deaths. And this is what Sewa has done in the villages that they cover in the state of Gujarat. So it's a matter both of educating people and offering them access, but bringing healthcare to them so that it's within their cultural norms, it is an accessible thing. The problem is that it's much more of a private, small-scale approach than it is a government policy. Government policy in many developing countries is to spend upwards of 3/4 of the healthcare budget on urban-based curative healthcare that never reaches the largest proportion of people in the rural areas. And so most of the people don't even have access. So if we're looking at women's reproductive health problems, the issue really is to turn around, take that money, put it into primary reproductive healthcare on a level that is accessible to people within their villages, and to remove the obstacles like transportation that so many women face in trying to better their own health and subsequently that of their families.
Do you think your report has anything to say to the United States about its own healthcare system?
Oh, absolutely, because when we look here, we have, again, the issue of lack of primary health care, and we're constantly struggling with spending thousands upon thousands more dollars solving problems than we would otherwise have spent had we addressed the root causes. And this comes back to nutritional deficiencies among low-income populations in pregnancy, as well as, you know, the spread of sexually transmitted diseases, or extending toward other things like coronary disease and so forth. So, yeah. We have to look at primary health care in the United States, too. I don't think it's a prescription that only pertains to poorer countries. It's a prescription that is one that's good for everybody.
Jody Jacobson, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jody Jacobson is a senior researcher at the World Watch Institute and the author of the new report, Women's Reproductive Health, The Silent Emergency. This is Fresh Air.